That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to Crane FM Resistance Radio. I'm Ann Levine. I have been your host, reporter, and producer. You can hear Crane FM on the web at cranefm.com.ua. cranefm.com.ua. If you would like more information or would like to send a message to Ukrainians on Crane FM's airwaves, you can contact me at levinecape@gmail.com. That's levinecape@gmail.com. This show was edited by Ursula Rudenberg at Pacifica Radio. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Ann Levine from WOMR in Provincetown and WFMR, Orleans, Massachusetts. Thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
Today, from the Wings Archive.
I don't think it's the time to be carefully political and cautious. Mm-hmm. It's the time to let go and be honest.
There's a river of birds in migration. A nation of women with wings.
There's Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Mary Daly, a Catholic theologian born in 1928, became a fierce feminist critic of patriarchal religion. In 1999, Daly lost her job at Boston College for insisting on teaching a class to women only. Her final book, released in 2006, is titled Amazon Grace, Recalling the Courage to Sin Big. This campus radio host reached across the generation gap to record one of Daly's very last interviews.
This is Mara Williams, otherwise known as DJ Kadiad. Today we have an interview with Mary Daly, who's a very famous feminist scholar, originally a theologian, and now she identifies more as a philosopher. She's a big name, very controversial career, and a heavy list of thought-provoking books. So I was really nervous to talk to her. And one of the reasons that I was nervous is because her work is difficult. It's very combative and very aggressive. Her groundbreaking work happened in 1968 and the early 70s when she published The Church and the Second Sex and Beyond God the Father, that brought the world around to thinking about the patriarchy and the church and ways that specifically the Catholic Church reinforced a structure that oppressed women. So that's where she started. Even though the book that's out right now, which is called Amazon Grace, Recalling the Courage to Sin Big, is less combative than her earlier works, it is still very aggressive. And it's a little difficult to know how to engage with this, especially as a young person whose version of feminism is very different than Mary's. And I tried to get into a little bit in the interview, but it's not very apparent. My definition of third wave feminism and trans feminism says that instead of just focusing on creating women only spaces, it looks as gender as a social construct that is used as a tool of oppression and includes men and transgendered people in the process and the project of liberation and emancipation. So it says basically gender is used to oppress everyone, even though people who are female-bodied may feel the effects differently, may feel the effects more because of the institutionalized nature of oppression. that everyone should be involved with the process of gender liberation. So with that said, let's just get straight to the interview, and you can judge and listen with a critical ear to what she has to say, because there are some good things, and she's a big name. So let's go straight to the interview with Mary Daly. Thanks for agreeing to talk with me. I'm really excited.
Well, I'm excited too.
I got your new book, which is called Amazon Grace. And I was wondering how you came to write this book.
Well, it's a pretty wild book.
Mm-hmm.
I look upon it as the daughter of my last book, which was Quintessence. Amazon Grace is about Aristotelian philosophy and modern quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
But then it is also pretty wild and far out and very much about now and women's lives now. So the subtitle is Recalling the Courage to Sin Big. And some may wonder why. You could ask me that.
Yeah, why? What does that phrase, sin big, mean to you?
Well, it struck me one day when I happened to be looking at the word sin at its roots, its etymology.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that it's related to the Latin est, meaning she is or he is. So it's derived from an Indo-European root, meaning to be. So mm-hmm. It suddenly clicked for me that to sin is to be, and to be is to sin. And in German, the word sein, which is obviously from sin, also means to be.
Interesting.
And so I began to spin off from that quite a bit, like the courage to sin. It's not about itty-bitty sins against little rules, but it's about gigantic sins, because it's big being. It's being, really. Be laughing, be thinking, be writing, be walking, whatever. Being. Participating in the ultimate intimate reality of the universe. So, it's the courage to be wicked. And that's what we need, because we're living in my opinion, we're living in the most desperate of times.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various reactions we can have to that. One of them is rage. So, what do you think?
I love the idea of sinning big. You know, I grew up in a Christian patriarchal religion, like a lot of people do, and
yeah.
Sinning, it was inescapable. You know, just being alive, you couldn't get away from it, and so to hear that.
It's a good thing.
That it's a good thing that you're, right. Instead of just, you know, stepping on people's toes or but that by being yourself and by being ecstatic and joyful, you are in some ways stepping on the toes of religion and hierarchy and patriarchy.
Right.
And that's exciting.
It is. It's fun, too.
Yeah, it's like, you know, sometimes we talk about taking down structures or resisting, and it's not any fun. And so just the idea that being joyful or being being yourself can be a way of resisting
those
things.
And it is connected with rage.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought a lot about rage, and I wrote about it. And do you mind if I read you a little passage?
Oh, please, yeah.
Okay, and this has been Pure Lust, my book Pure Lust, in which I started thinking about rage.
Mm-hmm.
I said, as she is drawn into the spiraling movement of befriending, a woman becomes a friend to the being in herself, which is to say, her centering self. The intensity of her desire focuses her energy, which becomes unsplintered, unblocked. The focusing gathering of her dissociated energy makes possible the release of rage. The metamorphosing sage rides her rage. It is her broom, her fire-breathing winged mare. It is her spiraling staircase, leading to where she can find her own kind, unbind her mind. Rage is not a stage. It's not something to be gotten over. It is transformative, focusing force.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like a horse who streaks across fields on a moonlit night, her mane flying. Rage gallops on pounding hooves of unleashed passion. The sounds of its pounding awaken transcendent emotion. As the ocean roars its rhythms into every creature, giving birth to sensations of our common sources, courses, rage too makes senses come alive, thrive again. And that means to me that it wakes us up. And so that is a positive result of the horrors around. If we can recognize, deal with, face, I don't care about deal with, cross that off, then that awakens rage. That makes me think of Matilda Justin Gage and her rage, which was incredible, strong. So there's like a heavy smog of tension that's hanging over us, and we can break through it.
And use the rage as a tool and not just as...
I think it's like a natural growth of the... I think of it as the virtue of rage, of this habit that would technically be called a habit philosophically, but it's something that accumulates, and if you behave outrageously, that's good in an outrageous situation. You become happy, and there can be and is often great fun consequent upon the rage, because you're not hiding things from yourself anymore. You're facing it. Remember back on election day of November 2nd, 2004, how everyone was so terribly disappointed, everyone I knew, so terribly horrified at what had happened, that Bush had won. And we think about all the horrors going on now in Iraq, everywhere, the destruction of the fabric of society in America from this government and from the paralysis that's happening to people. Well, I don't want to be paralyzed from rage. I want to be awakened by it, and that can happen. It can be that transformative.
One of the quotes that I came upon of someone who was writing a reaction to some of your works was, I don't know if you mind if I read this. To accept some of Mary Daly's arguments is to be made angry. I was struck by that because it's not necessarily a bad thing. In order to understand some of your work,
I would hope she'd be angry.
Yeah, yeah.
How could you not be angry? You turned on the TV set. I want to throw in a couple of ideas. One is the dissociation, the reversal that's everywhere. When our president and his colleagues, if you can call them that, I think of them as dummies, but really when they speak, they speak nonsense. And it's often a reversal, and there's a long tradition of that, like in the Bible, the idea that Adam gave birth to Eve. You know, if you can swallow that, you can swallow anything. So reversal is turning everything inside out and upside down, which is what patriarchal thinking does, if you can call it thinking. It's just important to recognize that reversal is everywhere, everywhere in the foreground, which is the television, the shopping malls, the Sunday sermons, ordinary classrooms, everywhere. So what I recommend is that we become positively revolting hags. So it's embarrassing. Good. Let's be embarrassed. Embarrass everyone. And be real.
Absolutely. I saw a cartoon today. I'm also a cartoonist, and so I read political cartoons like all the time, as I think it's a great way for art.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Yeah, but one of the cartoons that I read had a picture of a skeleton, and it said at the bottom, you know, gee, I'm really glad I went to college, and, you know, it was basically a memento mori, you know, what does this all mean? So what, you impressed, you got the best shopping mall experience, or you didn't offend someone, if you weren't really true to yourself, you know.
I think the important thing to know about it is that it's joyous. It doesn't, it seems contradictory, but it's not. But to see the truth, to put it together, to name it, requires courage. And the result is happiness, joy. When women can see that or experience that, it's very energizing. Or I would say gynergizing.
This is Mara Williams, otherwise known as DJ Kadia. This is The Fringe. Today we have an interview with Mary Daly, who's a very famous feminist scholar. One of the things that I liked about reading the book Amazon Grace, Recalling the Courage to Sin Big, is the sense of fun in it. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on, and it's not, I didn't find it even particularly linear, which was, you know, was hard for me at first.
Sounds very linear.
Yeah.
It involves time travel.
Exactly.
A biophilic future, the lost and found continent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a future that I call an archaic future, that it's life-loving. The characters on Lost and Found Continent, like Annie and Noah, Kate and Sophie, whom I meet there, and the many animals, are very happy. They're alive. They're jumping up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from their freedom and their ability to see and name as it is. And to hear. It's also important to know that naming, accurate naming, is rooted in real hearing. Like, women are often heard into knowing their own stories, as Nell Morton, a great theologian, once said.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't blah, 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 word, talk, but if the power of naming is stolen from us, that's because the power of hearing has been stolen from us, of deeply hearing each other. And animals, they have a lot to say. So here we are. I mean, it's a ghastly time, but it's also a time in which we can be alive. Another thing is that when we have that spirit, like those of us who've been around a while, we're here in the 70s, and I can remember great times when there would be hundreds of women in a room and all sensing the power among us, sensing our energy floating around, and communicating it, magnetizing it. There's a theory in Rupert Sheldrake, the quantum physicist, in his work of morphogenetic fields, that are energy fields that give birth to new forms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was happening then, the birth of the new form of radical elemental feminism. And I like to call it radical elemental because we're connected with the elements.
Mm-hmm.
So the energy fields are what we sense when we're around others who feel the same way. You can sense it around animals, around trees. You can hear the trees talking if you want to, and not worry of being crazy. And so others, women and some men, and certainly the animals, the trees and the birds and the bees, they all share in this resonance, this morphic resonance that happens when we allow ourselves to come alive.
I'm just still stuck on the, I'm thinking about that room full of women and feeling the energy, and having felt similar experiences, especially with people coming together for in cooperation and in consensus and things like that.
Yeah, and especially if we can let loose, if it isn't all controlled and carefully political and cautious. I don't think it's the time to be carefully political and mm-hmm. cautious. It's the time to let go and be honest. And so if you're not immediately rewarded for that, well, do you expect to be? You know, honesty isn't really usually rewarded right away.
Mm-hmm.
But internally you're rewarded, and finally you might find you have more friends because they share your feelings.
Absolutely. I'd like to get back to the power of naming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at one point in the book you refer to yourself as a and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was a radical feminist pirate.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering how you got to that image, and sort of what kind of names have you given yourself, or have you taken?
I've been called a lot of things.
Yeah.
But most of them I like.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one of the blurbs was taken from a review of my book Outer Course that was in the New York Times, which wouldn't be likely to review me now because, you know, I'm too out of it. But they said, philosopher, theologian, mythologist, explorer, pirate, warrior, witch, fairy, or leprechaun, daily draws her readers into her outrageously lived life. Well, pirate is big to me. There was a great Irish female pirate a long time ago whose name was Granuaile. And the little kids in school have songs that they sing to Granuaile, Granuaile. She was tough. She sailed the seven seas. She met with Queen Elizabeth and stared her down. And Granuaile was, pirate. Why is that important? She was a pirate, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost everything has been stolen from us by the patriarchy. And so if I righteously take back what has been stolen from me, that's a good thing. It's mine. You stole it, I'll take it back. And our creativity has been stolen, our creative energies, our religion, mm-hmm. our own religious life. European conquerors of America came and took away from the Indians, from the Native Americans, their own powerful religion, the sensuality of women, the closeness to nature, and did indeed try to make them into slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So I want it back. And Matilda Jocelyn Gage was onto that. She was onto the fact that Christianity had robbed women tremendously. Okay, here's a passage from Matilda Jocelyn Gage, our great 19th century four sister, who was kicked out of the movement, basically, of the women's movement, because she wasn't tame enough.
Mm-hmm.
So some of us are trying to bring back awareness of her. She says, "Has woman no wrongs to avenge upon the church? As I look backward through history, I see the church everywhere, stepping upon advancing civilization, hurling woman from the plane of natural rights, where the fact of her humanity had placed her, and through itself in its control over the state in the doctrine of, quote, revealed rights, everywhere teaching an inferiority of sex, a created subordination of woman to man, making her very existence a sin, holding her accountable," and my very existence is a sin, by the way, "holding her accountable to a diverse code of morals from man, declaring her possessed of fewer rights in church and state. Her very entrance into heaven made dependent upon some man to come as mediator between her and the Savior it has preached, thus crushing her personal, intellectual, and spiritual freedom. See, Matilda, that was a quote. Mm-hmm. Matilda has had a habit recently of coming to me, often at night. And I am sane, but I don't care whether anyone believes me. And so when she finished that reading, I said, "Hooray, Matilda, you go, girl." And she did. She disappeared. "Oh, no, Matilda, I wasn't telling you to leave. That's just a contemporary expression of approval and encouragement." But somehow I knew she had gotten my message and that this was just a parting joke. And she is really very present now. I've gotten Matilda's message. She is saying, it's time for women to become engaged. So Matilda becomes ever more present in this book under the theme of time travel.
In the book, you also end up discussing contemporary problems with church and state, and I hate to say it, but impending theocracy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and sort of comparing, in the conversations you compare.
There are strong parallels. It was a time of emerging fascism and use of extreme religious ideology, right-wing ideology, to control people, to make them afraid of the end of the world that is going, and look forward to it, because there's nothing in this world that's worth bothering with. So they look forward to, you know, the second coming.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole series of books, horrible, well, in my opinion, of course, the Left Behind series. And I noticed that Bush carefully has woven his appeal to fundamentalists into his talk, like the "no child left behind," it has mm-hmm. double meaning. He doesn't want any child left behind, meaning real, whole, living on this earth. They should all be swept up in this manic desire to die, to be killed, to go to another place.
Well, and that sort of disregard for the physical,
yes,
plays right into the environmental
degradation. Yeah, and also look at what we do, and don't look, because who can bear it, what the United States has done to Iraq, the absolute insanity, the destruction of life, the destruction of life on Earth by global warming, by climate change, and then ignoring that it exists. So nothing could be said that's too strong about the wrongness of that.
There's, you know, one way to deal with this is to have your voice and to, you know, be outrageous. But what are other ways that you find to both keep your spirits up and sort of stem the, you know, change things?
Well, I think the voice is very important.
Mm-hmm.
For example, many people think when they're reading a book, they can just skim through or just read it on the computer. I think that's bullcrap. You know, that really is, that's not what words are. Words are sounds. They're not scribbling on paper. The scribbles on the paper are secondary. But words are elemental. They have power. If you have any sense for powerful poetry, you know that you can be carried far by words, that they have meanings that aren't easily fit into a dictionary. So it isn't, I don't want to belittle speech at all, because if speaking is real, it involves naming and acting and creating politically as well as every other way.
Mm-hmm.
Get out and fight. Whichever way it, I would say whichever way is most appropriate to your own talents and wishes.
Passions.
Passions, absolutely.
Yeah. And one of the things that maybe for people at home who haven't visually interacted with your work, in this book, you capitalize words. And at first I was a little put off just because it's not traditional. And like I said, I was kind of expecting a linear book and everything. And then you got to a point where you were capitalizing, I think, Wild Wicked Women and different things. And then Bush and Blair and Bin Laden were all lowercase letters. And I just felt this like surge of like, yeah, that's how it's supposed to be.
Actually, I have been doing that from the beginning. I just probably have become crazier and crazier about it. But it has a logic to it. If I capitalize, for example, the word being, B-E hyphen I-N-G, that means infinite, ultimate reality. If I say being lowercase, it's like all of us who participate in that reality. There are different levels of meaning. I spell background with a capital B.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful thing. Foreground, small f.
It's just,
you can take it or leave it. It's a way of communicating.
Yeah. And how do you find that, is there any difference in generationally between how women react to your work?
I don't want to make any flat generalizations.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that communication among the generations is extremely important, and that's one of the targets of the Dollarcrats, you know, big boys, bullies. When I was fired from my job at Boston College just for being myself, doing, saying honestly what I think and know, I know that the target in large ways was communication between generations, so that the young students, young kids coming along would not get the hang of this right away. There wouldn't be anybody to tell them. And so it's most important to keep that communication among generations. The result is very often you have young people in their teens and 20s who are pretty deadheaded, flat, because that vision hasn't been imparted. And instead there's a fear of knowing, seeing, being, acting. And that's a sad thing for me. It's not that I'm saying that older people are necessarily brighter, smarter, anything of that nature. But there's been a lack of communication, and that's not been by accident. It's been intended by the oppressors. I have to say, I find a certain dullness among young kids in their 20s, and at the same time, a tremendous hunger.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get something, if they're given something to play with, to work with, they can wake up very fast. And women who can remember the 70s feel very happy to know that somebody else does. So we can have a new morphic field, a cosmic resonance that takes into account our history. As Matilda Justin Gage said, you know, the women of today are the thoughts of their mothers and the mothers of those mothers before them. Thousands of women are speaking through us today. So I mean, think of the enormous resonance of that history of women who were suppressed, held down, tried, fought back. It's in us, and it's required of us to rise up and let them speak through us.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And that's a good way to end?
Yeah, I think so.
Feminist philosopher and theologian Mary Daly died on January 3rd, 2010. Wings thanks interviewer Mara Williams, KDVS-FM, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose works can be found at www.gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7.
At KBOO, we're always busy bees preparing wonderful programming for you to enjoy. Now, during our spring membership drive, we need some money to go with that honey. Help us raise $56,000 by May 28th to support our efforts to pollinate the media landscape with locally produced, independent, people-powered community radio. Donate right now at kboo.fm/give or tap the donate button in the KBOO mobile app.
Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Burns.